If you believe the futurists, artificial intelligence is going to replace us all. Hosts of personal finance radio shows will be at the top of the list. I'm sure I'm out, replaced by a robot. But so too may many jobs be in the wealth management industry, not just because of AI, but for lots of different reasons. There's so much change happening. Melissa Shin is the editorial director of Advisors Edge, an investment executive, publications focused on the investment business. Hello there, Melissa.
Hi, Bruce.
So you did a piece on this. Your publication did a piece on this broad topic. What did you find? Where did you focus?
Well, we've done a few pieces. So there's been a lot of consternation, shall we say, amongst advisors, as you mentioned on the top, that their jobs may be ripe for disruption for sure, and definitely are concerned about that. So certainly, we've looked at portfolio management side of things, the wealth management and portfolio management side of things. We've also looked at the potential for advisors to be replaced by robo-advisors, which is sort of the hot term. They don't really like that term. It's usually online advice that's preferred. But of course, robo-advisors, as us in the media know, it's a little more interesting to use the term.
Yeah. There have been some layoffs of portfolio managers at some big brand name companies like BlackRock and BMO. How big a trend is this? What sense do you have was that just headline grabbing, or is this a systemic shift?
Yeah, I mean, it's a systemic shift in the sense that cost pressure is becoming more important for clients. They're understanding that, as education grows through, a lot of personal finance, that fees are important. But also, advisors are also very important in the sense that they help people along when they're trying to make decisions. But in terms of the portfolio management aspect, yeah, I think a lot of portfolio managers are seeing their compensation on average go downward because of ETFs primarily, which are a lot of them are passive investments that essentially, don't require as many people looking into the investment aspect of it. It's set up with algorithms a lot of the time. And then you also have sort of the hybrid, what's been called smart beta or active ETFs, where you have algorithms that are sort of managed by people. But as you can imagine, it doesn't require, the same number of people potentially. It's still a lot of skill. It's just sort of allocated differently.
Do you have any numbers on the comp decline? So a portfolio manager was making on average X and now they're making on average Y. I can expect that a big hit has been on the bonus side of things.
Sure. So we've actually seen, CFA Society, Chartered Financial Analysts, they do a national survey. In 2011, they found that average compensation was $397,000. It went up to $629,000 in 2014, but that was an average that was, pushed up by a lot of big bonuses. Bonuses tend to be decreasing now. What they're saying now is, like a good average fund manager could earn between $200,000 and $400,000 a year before ETF boom, and now it's sort of declining a little bit from there. Bonuses are also, it's sort of hard to justify large bonuses when, maybe funds aren't performing as well. So it's really, as you can kind of see, the larger conversations on compensation in terms of CEOs and things like that, there's a lot of stay on pay activism and all that kind of thing. So it's kind of a trickle effect into the other areas.
Would it be safer to be a portfolio manager in a niche part of the industry? Say your focus is on healthcare stocks or small cap stocks. Are there differences there? Are you harder hit if you're more of a generalist?
I think if you can differentiate yourself as in any business, that's really important. There's a lot of sort of big names out there that are well known for earning a lot because they've sort of managed to beat the market consistently and that kind of thing. And that can be hard to replicate, as you can. So if you are specialized and looking at something that others aren't, I know on your show you've recently had people talk about, gender diversity ETFs and things like that. You can kind of make a name for yourself that way if you're looking at something different. It's just sort of, specialization versus generalization.
Let's isolate the tech variable for a second here. This notion of artificial intelligence, which is a phrase that seems to encompass everything. What are some of the trends that you're watching as it relates to AI? So if we park the fee pressure and CRM2 and consumer awareness about fees and all that stuff to the side, just looking at it through the lens of technology, what are the big trends, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think sort of the understanding that it's not just about wanting automation. I mean, there's a lot of times where people can kind of go into, you know, a web interface and click a few buttons and they get an answer. And I was actually at an event yesterday for insurance brokers where they were saying, you know, people, they are only actually asked three pieces of information before they get a quote. And they'll call the call center and say, wait a minute, is that enough information? Do you have enough? Is that okay? And so it's very interesting that, you know, I guess we as humans are used to interaction and we're used to, you know, sort of maybe bouncing ideas off people and that kind of thing. So sometimes when it's too cold or it just seems too easy, you know, maybe people get a little bit suspicious. You know, and I think what we're seeing, especially in the realm of financial advice, is that the real strength comes from hybridization. So where you have the technological tools at your disposal, maybe to create a portfolio solution for you or to automate things like rebalancing, and then the advisor can really focus on getting to know the client better. There's a lot of times when, you know, if there's a checkbox that you just fill out or a questionnaire that you just fill out about risk, for instance, and asks you, you know, how do you feel if the market was to go up by this much or to go down by this much, how would you feel? And, you know, that doesn't really, that's not a conversation. That's just looking at something and putting an answer in. Whereas a person, an advisor, can kind of sit with you and say, okay, you know, when the market crashed, you know, in 2008, how did you feel? Did you, what did you do at that point? Or what kind of job are you in? Are you in a job that's really risky? Are you a freelancer? Do you kind of rely on many sources of income? Or do you just kind of have, you know, one job that's very steady? Or do you have a pension? You know, those kind of things
are
not necessarily going to be captured that way.
What are some of the challenges that you face in covering this industry? And I ask because the industry that you cover is also your advertiser. It is your subscriber, whatever the business model is. And it must be very difficult to be critical of it because many of your readers would have confirmation bias. They want to read your publication for confirmation that what they're doing is working, not that, you know, this world is transforming and they need to step up and really consider doing things differently, or maybe that the gravy train is going to stop. How do you navigate that?
Right. Well, do that helps with that is we see ourselves as educators, not just journalists. You know, first of all, we do see ourselves as journalists and we do maintain a healthy distance from the industry. You know, we are we write editorials that sometimes we get letters and they say, you know, you're anti-advisor, and sometimes we get letters of support. So really, it's, you know, we are reporting the facts. Certainly, we are trying to educate our readers, you know, to the point about confirmation bias. You know, I think what we try to do is actually write stories about what is coming so that they can be prepared. And if that doesn't really jibe with their worldview, the whole idea is that they can, you know, get ready for that if it's not yet. You know, we want to show them how to be better advisors so that they have those tools to say, you know, as I'm sure you've reported on quite a bit, there's, you know, a backlash against high fees, and it's really about them showing that they are actually valuable. And if they can't do that, then they, you know, maybe they don't belong in the industry. So it's really important, I think, for us as journalists to educate and make sure that people see the content in our publications that allow them to become better at what they do.
Interesting. Melissa, thanks for your time today.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Melissa Shin is the editorial director of Advisors Edge and Investment Executive. Lots of change going on in wealth management.